Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
This is the Balkan Adventures Podcast, everyday life and experiences in the Western Balkans.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Balkan Adventures Podcast with me, David Bailey. And in this episode, we're finding out about a lady who's walked 4,000 kilometres over 7 months from the canals of Amsterdam to the city of Sarajevo. I managed to catch up with this lady via Skype as she took a break in a coffee bar in Split, Croatia. So without further ado, let's crack on. This is the Balkan Adventures Podcast. I'm David Bailey, sat in a village in northwest Bosnia. At the moment, in Split, down in Dalmatia, where all the Hajduk, where all the bandits hang out, is a young lady from Holland, from the Netherlands, rather. I can't say Holland, because maybe she comes from somewhere else in the Netherlands. But she's from the Netherlands, and her name is Eva, and I'm going to try and pronounce this. It's Eva Smaler, right?
Yes, you did it right. Yes, Eva Smaler.
Eva, you've spent the last months and months and months getting all the way from Amsterdam on the coast of the North Sea, all the way in the first point to Sarajevo, and you walked the whole distance. So the first question begs, why did you plan to walk this amazing amount of kilometres from Amsterdam to Sarajevo?
A good question. I kind of asked that myself as well, especially now while I already done it. But, I had my bike in Sarajevo, so I had to pick up my bike. I could, of course, take train or fly, but I thought it would be nice to walk. And it started already like a year or two ago. I started walking from Amsterdam, from my hometown. That was actually a great feeling to close the door and then you are on an adventure. And that was really funny because I was walking through my own city. I knew every street, but I was on adventure, you know. You have a rough plan, you have a route you want to hike, but you never know, you know, where you will sleep that night, and you never know what exactly you can expect or who you will meet, or, well, you don't know the details. So what I did was following the pilgrims route in the Netherlands all the way through the south. But I didn't stay on campsites or slept in bed and breakfast and stuff like that. I just walked and walked until I had enough, and then I looked for a place where I could camp. Only in the Netherlands it's not allowed to do wild camping, so I had to knock on doors and ask, can I put up my tent in your garden? Can I maybe put up in some field of grass, like grass field? And that actually brought me this whole new how do you say that? A view of the Netherlands. You know, we always say that in the Netherlands people are not so warm, and that the hospitality is not so big, and that it's like everyone for itself. And that is actually what we compare with, you know, the further east you travel, the more warm it is and people are more open and you feel more welcome. And then because I did it the other way around, I brought this way of traveling, well, to my own country, I discovered that, you know, you can have exactly the same experience. So that was really amazing to rediscover my own country. And so I continued from the Netherlands through Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, a little bit of France, and then through Austria and a little bit of Switzerland also. That was where I entered the Alps. And all the there's a dog. And all the time I kind of connected different long distance trails, and I put all the information, all the tracks on my GPS. So I kind of had a rough route, but you know, I could decide every day where exactly I could go. So it was nothing strict, nothing really planned. And when I really liked the place, I stayed a little bit longer. Also because in the meantime, I was writing for my blog. Most stories are in Dutch, but now I'm working on the English ones. So I really, really took the time. And that is also what I did when I was hiking the Via Dinarica. I was really taking the time. So when someone invites you to, you know, come over to have a coffee, or someone says, oh, you can stay here for the day, I could call it a day when it was only 1 p.m. So with this same way, I traveled through Europe. And I think it was not even the why I did it in the first place, but I kind of found out along the way that maybe that was the reason why I hiked from Amsterdam to Sarajevo. I wanted to go back to the Balkans, but first I wanted to, you know, explore where I came from, something like that.
You're a lady and you were doing this all on your own. Did you not feel scared? Did you not feel worried? Did you not have anxiety every day walking these thousands of kilometers just on your own?
It's funny that people always ask, were you not afraid? Like they think I was not, something like that. But of course I am. I have many, many fears. And actually, I think that is what it's all about. But it's easier, you know, there are always more reasons to not go. There are always more voices in you telling you why you cannot do something. But I always try to listen to that one reason that actually, you know, makes you feel and makes you want to move or do something. And I think that's really important. So I do have fears all the time. And I mean, I have been really afraid. There were some animals. You have to really, you know, you don't have to be afraid, but you have to know what to do. I mean, it's actually no problem when you're camping in the middle of the forest and there are bears, but you know, it might be a wise thing to, I don't know, put your food a little bit away, or, you know, there are things you have to know, but you don't have to be, it's like not an immediate danger, but you feel the fear. But you also know that this fear is not completely realistic. And so, yeah, I'm afraid all the time, but it's actually this whole process of dealing with that and learning that in the end makes you feel so much more confident. And I think that's also by doing it on your own, because you're facing everything and you have these struggles, but because you make every decision on your own, and you kind of have to learn that you can trust yourself. And even if you make a wrong decision, that still you can trust yourself, that you can get yourself out of it. Or if you really need help, that you're able to get help.
When did you actually think that you had started the Balkan leg of your walk? Was it when you got into Slovenia, or was it when you got into Croatia?
Actually, it was in Slovenia, but not. So I entered Slovenia from... there was this three-country point from Austria, Italy, and Slovenia. And then you enter Slovenia. I was hiking Via Alpina there. But then it's the Julian Alps. So that's Slovenia, and that's really Western Europe. Okay, language changed, and there are like a few things different, but basically it feels like Western Europe. And so for me, like, this Balkan thing started when I arrived from the Via Alpina on the Via Dinarica again. This is at Prajama. There's this castle in the rock, and that's where the Via Dinarica White Trail starts, and where I ended last year. And that's that was for me really the point where it felt like, okay, now I'm back. I don't know exactly how the Balkan borders go, but that's actually a less familiar region of Slovenia. So most people, I think, go to Bled and Bohinj and Triglav. But there's this whole part of Slovenia, which is, for me, it feels completely different, and you can hardly compare it to the Julian Alps. So, yeah, that's where, for me, it started to feel Balkan.
I've read on the internet a little bit about the Via Dinarica, Dinarica, and it seems that it's very, very remote. Where you walk is just almost completely in the wilderness. You're going along, you know, different types of countryside, from mountain escarpments through stunning valleys. But in basic terms, not many people live there. So how do you negotiate a route? Is it marked, or did you use your GPS, or how did you manage to find your way through this wonderful Balkan landscape?
Well, first of all, you have the Via Dinarica, and there are different trails. So the White Trail that goes high up in the mountains, that's what I hiked last summer. And indeed, they're very remote areas. So what I think is important that you bring a GPS, because although, you know, it is partly marked, the trail is not officially open yet. Only in Bosnia and Herzegovina it's officially open, the Via Dinarica White Trail. But all the other countries, it's more an idea. So they're using old existing trails like the Crna Gora, Transverzala, and other trails in countries, and they are marked, but they're not always very well maintained. So definitely GPS is very important, with good maps and where you have the actual track on it. It's good to have some additional maps for sure. Along the way, try to find information. And also, for other people who hiked it, they left comments, and this is all on the Via Dinarica website. They have a platform, it's called Outdoor Active, and that's actually where they collect all the information. So from water sources to, I don't know, bars, restaurants, but also hikers leave comments about the condition of the trail. So that's really, really important, that when you start this hike, that you realize what you get yourself into.
Your English is absolutely first class. So like most people from the Netherlands, you're truly bilingual. The question begs, walking through the Balkans, even if we call the language the former Serbo-Croatian, there are dialect differences. It's a very complicated language. So how did you cope with communication on the Balkan leg of your walk?
Oh yeah, that's a problem. I thought, when I start hiking in Amsterdam, I have enough time to learn the language when I enter Croatia. But of course I didn't. I started to learn some words and stuff like that. But yeah, well, you think you have months and months. It doesn't work like that. when you're hiking, you're busy all day. And I didn't quite manage to learn the language, but you pick up words, and I always ask what words mean, and I have Google Translate app. But yeah, most of the time it can be pretty tricky, so I definitely should learn the language.
You said when you were walking to start off with, when you left the Netherlands, that you were wild camping, you had your tent. Now down the Balkan leg of the Via Dinarica, there's no hostels as far as I know, definitely no hotels. So was it wild camping with the bears, or did you manage to get some shelter with local families?
Oh, well, it's really, really easy to get shelter with local families. Yeah, that actually don't even have to ask for it. Especially when you're a woman hiking alone, you'll be noticed. And then everybody, offers you something to drink, something to eat. And then even when it's only 2 in the afternoon, they want you to stay for the rest of the day. And well, actually the rest of the week. So it's very easy to get a shelter. But it's not really necessary. I mean, it is safe to camp, and as long as you know where you can find water, and you are aware of the weather. Wind can be really problematic in some parts, especially near the coast in Croatia. There's this part of the Via Dinarica that goes on Vela Beach, and there you have the Burara, which can be really strong. Although actually on this part of the trail, Velebitski, Planinarski Put, there are many, many shelters. And I expect it to be very, very remote, and indeed not finding anything. But it turned out that there is, at least every 3 days, a place where you can have a warm meal, or where you can even find a guest house. And actually there were hotels, so yeah. But now I'm actually talking about the Via Dinarica White Trail. This year I did the Via Dinarica Green Trail, and that one goes a little bit more north of the White Trail. So it goes more through the valleys, and it's more through the lower part. So you will come across many, many, many villages. And this is not a touristy region. So no, there may be no hotels, but there are many facilities, and indeed families who often offer you a place to stay.
The food, everybody offers food here in the Balkans, and sometimes it can become quite a painful experience when you're eating after eating after eating. Eva, the food in the Balkans is different from that in the Netherlands. What's the favorite food that you like to eat when you're in this area?
Well, I really, really love the soups. what is it called? Jota in Slovenia. It's this really heavy kind of soups, which you get served in the mountains, and they're full of vegetables, and they make it in large, large portions. So you can always make me happy with that.
How do you cope with all the meat? Are you a vegetarian, for example? Because I know a lot of young ladies that come down from Northern Europe say, "Well, I'm vegetarian," and the Balkans is a meat eater's paradise, isn't it?
It is. I have to confess, I was a vegetarian until my first traveling to Eastern Europe and Balkans, and it was actually in Croatia where I first had meat, because I stayed at a place a family invited me. And they prepared this huge breakfast, and then there was a lot of meat, and I just couldn't say, I'm sorry, I'm a vegetarian. I felt so rude, and I really wanted to try that food, because I think food is a big part of traveling and getting to know a culture. And you see, but you also taste. So I don't know exactly, but I think it was in 2012 13, I'm not sure, 11, when I started to eat meat. But yeah, I only eat meat when I'm traveling, and I never buy it myself. So I think that's a good way to cope with actually the reason why I am or was vegetarian, and combine that with traveling in the Balkans.
When you're going down the route, you've been blogging, you're using your GPS. I mean, when I first stumbled across you on the internet. You'd already posted over 150, I think, images, beautiful images of your trip, documenting your trip. Talk us through how much technology do you carry with you, and how do you keep the batteries charged so that you can do things like post pictures, post Instagram updates, blog, write your posts? How do you do that? Because it must take a lot of weight on your back to carry all this equipment. Surely.
Yeah, that it really is, actually. So I always bring a solar charger, and I got one. I borrowed one from a friend. Unfortunately, it broke. It fell, so that's not working anymore. But also, there's not much sun anymore. But so yeah, I had a solar charger, which was already pretty heavy, and I carry extra power banks. And first, I had one, and then halfway, I bought another one, because my solar charger was broken. And it is a lot of weight. And the thing is that it is not necessary. You can find everything super, super lightweight. But my problem is always this budget issue. If you want to, you can spend loads and loads of money on super cool stuff. But I don't have that money. So I actually choose to carry a little bit more and then being able to blog and share. Rather than, you know, go back to Amsterdam, work my ass off, and then save enough money to buy all the equipment. So it can be much, you can do it much more efficient, but I choose to, you know, be heavy and maybe a little bit slower, but able to share it my way. So beside the solar charger, there are always places where you can charge. Like now I'm sitting at in the bar, and my power bank is inside, and I'm having it charged. So that's what you do. You search for electricity and Wi-Fi.
What equipment have you actually documented the journey with? Is it just mobile phones or cameras, or what equipment have you been using?
I'm only using my phone. That's also more or less a budget thing. I mean, I would love to have more cool equipment like a GoPro or a camera, but I'm only using my phone. So I made a few videos and photos, and yeah, I type everything, I touchscreen everything on my phone.
What's it like to create a blog post about something as adventurous as this and a normal blog post? And by that I mean, you know, things that you must probably do every day. But when you're sat on this green route or the white route looking out over a sunset, what is the experience like for you to try and document that? Because there must be a lot of emotion, surely.
What is the experience? I'm not sure if I write normal blog posts at all, because I always write when I'm traveling. So I don't know what the difference is, but what I try to do is, share my experience, of course, but also give a little look behind the scene. So yeah, sometimes I post like a beautiful, beautiful photo and people will say, oh, I wish I could be there. But then actually how I really feel is not that beautiful, or, you know, the way to get there was not that shiny. The experience of me blogging is, of course, to inspire others and to show, you know, how beautiful it is up here and what the possibilities are here for outdoor and everything, because many people don't know about the Balkans first. Especially Bosnia and Herzegovina, what people say, oh, but wasn't there a war? Isn't it dangerous? You know, people have this, yeah, they really don't know. So that was in the first place the reason to blog. But yeah, there's much more behind it for me. It's also show another approach of blogging. So not only sharing like the shiny Instagrammable moments, but like showing everything. And I hope in the end that would also inspire people, because then I hopefully will not be only this super cool adventurous, or I don't know, tough girl who goes outside and travels on her own, but I'm just as normal as others. But the only difference is that I'm doing it, and I want to show what it's like to do it.
When you've got up to one of these, I don't know, you're making one of these wonderful posts, and you said that you feel it hasn't been the easiest climb or the easiest route to get there, or you're not feeling your best. I mean, you're traveling on your own. How do you cope with these moments of I don't know, melancholy. I won't say depression, but you know, when you're not fit, how do you cope with slightly depressing days? Is it easy? Is it difficult? Have you found a trick of how to get over it?
Yeah, I think I did, actually, because I think the trick is loving those moments just as much as the others. It sounds maybe stupid, but I can kind of enjoy when I feel sad. And that's actually what melancholy is about for me. It's just another feeling, like happiness or joy. Can sadness be? And I don't think sadness should be something bad. It's just part of the deal. And how I cope is actually acknowledge that it's there, that feeling that you're maybe not so happy and jumpy. But don't make more of it than, you know, it's just a feeling and it will pass. And by accepting it and acknowledging it, that, you know, you feel like that, so you don't have to pretend that it's different. You don't have to think that it would be better if you felt different. No, that's how it is right now. And that's the beauty of it. And also because of those hard moments and difficult times, I do feel stronger and I do enjoy more, because when I then, you know, suddenly do enjoy, I can already be happy because I feel joy again. It sounds maybe a little bit stupid, but yeah. So basically, I kind of love also the difficult times.
We've been talking about that, you know, the difficult and happy times. So I'm going to put you on the spot with two questions. First one is the most scariest moment of the trip.
Most scariest moment of the trip. Oh, damn. Okay, I had two different types of scary moments, but one was most definitely when the weather got really, really bad. Then I got really scared. I was camping in the Dolomites in, I think it was Italy. Yeah, it was Italy. And I knew that there was a storm coming, but that was already, you know, pronounced for days and days. So I was kind of waiting. And then, yeah, it didn't really happen. But then, yeah, I put up my tent and I knew, this is going to be the night. That night, yeah, I think I never experienced a storm that bad. It was really, really disco party all around. It was lightnings non-stop, and the thunder, it was so loud, I felt everything shaking. And I was lying in my tent, like, thinking, okay, what is the moment that, you know, I run? When do you run? I mean, when I start running, I'm also exposed, so I really didn't know what to do. Well, I did know I had some options, but I was just too afraid to actually move. And in the end, it was the water level that went up in the river next to me. And so when I noticed that my tent started to float, I just picked up my stuff and I started to run. And it was a macadam road. And surprisingly enough, I found a cave, a pretty big cave, which in the end didn't turn out to be the wisest thing to do, hiding in a cave while there's thunder. But I did, and I felt safe at that moment. But yeah, that was a really terrible night. And actually, the next day, I found out that on the other side of the mountain, so on the other side of where I was camping, one of these big rock towers you have in the Dolomites completely fell down. So luckily, it didn't fall my side, but it fell to the other side of the mountain, and it blocked a road for over a kilometer. It was really such a huge rockfall. I've never seen something like that. So yeah, that was really scary.
And the second question, where did you have the most happiest, wonderful, exhilarating feeling, positive feeling on the trip?
Oh, I really suck at those answering questions like this. I already forgot. I think there are so many of those moments. Let me put it like this. I mean, it was not like this that I can say it's one moment, but the moment that I reached the mountains, maybe it's because I'm from the Netherlands, the flat country, that, you know, reaching the mountains, walking to the Alps, that that feels really, really amazing. Maybe even, you know, I felt more almost like I reached something than when I actually arrived in Sarajevo. Yeah, saw those first mountains and walked in the mountains. That was really, really a good feeling.
When you walked into Sarajevo, the end of the route that you'd planned, you must have been physically, mentally and emotionally exhausted.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I guess I was. I was really, really tired. But I think not physically necessarily, because, I mean, it doesn't make any difference. I could have walked for 7 more months. Physically, you only get stronger. But the last weeks in Bosnia and Herzegovina have been a little bit tough. The days were getting shorter. It was getting cold. So there are a few things which were just not so easy. Plus, I'm spending a lot of time with other people the last few weeks because you're invited everywhere, and which is an amazing experience. But I kind of felt exhausted at the end because I just had no space. I could not think. I just, you know, really gave everything. And I felt exhausted because I needed time. I needed to isolate myself and not think, not plan, not worry, nothing. Yeah. So in that way, I felt exhausted. And I was really, really happy to have my own room and shower and kitchen. And yeah, that was great.
You're now reunited with the bicycle, right? And I know that you've left Sarajevo now and you're in Split on the way back. How has it been cycling rather than walking for you? Has it been a wonder? Has it been so cool just to cycle instead of walk?
Actually, you have to know that I actually started with cycling. Those were my first adventures. So that was, this feels more natural, actually, being on the bike. But then for a few years, I decided to walk because I needed this slowness. But after walking 4,000 kilometers, I thought, it would be nice to be rolling again. So yes, it feels absolutely amazing to roll. At the same time, it's such a physical challenge. I forgot about that. That on the bicycle, you cannot just stop whenever you want. Sometimes you have to, you know, keep on pushing, because if you stop, you cannot get up again. So I kind of find out that for me at this moment, it's much more of a physical challenge than the hiking. But I think I kind of like it to, you know, this change from mental challenge walking, because you are so slow, you're really not mobile. By being able to, you know, on the bike, you're able to do just another 15 kilometers, while on foot, that's not an option when it's the end of the day. So now it's really cool to have this change of challenge. Yes.
How long will it take you now to get back home to the canals of Amsterdam?
Well, I'm not going back home. Actually, I decided this week I do have a house in Amsterdam, which a friend of mine rents now. But because it's social housing, it's not my house, I'm not allowed to rent it any longer. So I had to make the decision, like, going back and live there for the next 5 years or get rid of the house. So last week I decided to get rid of the house. So what I'm going back to the canals of Amsterdam, but only to get rid of my stuff, to pack everything and to go back here.
Are you coming back to the Balkans?
Yes, that's actually what I'm doing. So now I'm biking more or less to Zagreb, because I left some hiking stuff there last summer. That's a long story. But I got my stuff spread all over Europe. So now I'm biking back to Zagreb to pick up some stuff. And then I probably catch a bus to Amsterdam. And then in 2 weeks, I have to get rid of all my stuff in my apartment. And then I'm free to go wherever I want.
Where in your mind is that place, wherever you want?
And this is actually funny, because now it sort of, you know, makes the whole story like a circle. I want to spend more time in this region, in the Dinaric Alps, in the Dinarites, in these mountains. But I'm not necessarily planning to live here, so that everywhere is literally everywhere. I'll be trekking around, slow traveling, maybe every now and then staying at a place if I can find a cheap place. Or, you know, often people I meet offer me like, oh, you can stay in my summer house for a few weeks. So that's actually what I'm going to do. I'm going to travel around hiking, biking, and exploring.
But you're still going to document your life, right? You're still going to share all these experiences with us.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning. And there are many, many more plans, but things are not so sure yet. But for now, the only decision I made is that, you know, I'll be here for a while. And because I hiked all the way from Amsterdam to here, I really, and now it feels like it's not this, you know, spur of the moment things that you think, I'll just give up everything and I'll see. No, it really feels like, yeah, I still, even after such a long time, I still feel this strange urge to be here, to see and to feel, experience. And I still like those mountains and people and food and everything. So, yeah, after this 4,000 kilometer journey, I kind of, you know, am ready to let go of my house and start a new chapter.
Eva, where can we follow you? What website do you have? Where are you on Instagram? Let us know so that we can all follow you.
Oh, I choose the name Eva Dinarica Project, www.evadinaricaproject.com, and mostly on Instagram I post photos, and on Facebook. I do have a Twitter account, but I don't use it that often. And I'm working on my YouTube channel, but I also have to work on my vlog skills. So I am found everywhere, but mostly on my website and Instagram, I would say.
Thank you for giving us your time at the coffee bar in Split today. You have to promise one thing, that when you've got everything sorted out, please drop by the Banja Luka region, because I think it'd be really cool to share some stories offline, if you like.
Yeah, I would love to. Well, you know, if I leave my bike in Zagreb this time, probably I'll be biking from Zagreb to Sarajevo via Banja Luka, and then I'll stop by.
Eva Schmele, thank you so much. I hope you have a very safe onward trip. And I'm really looking forward to following your adventures, because I think there's just a growing community of us Northern Europeans that have decided that maybe Northern Europe is not the place that we want to finish in.
Yeah, yes. Yes, I think so too. And I kind of start to notice that. And that's really cool to find like-minded people. Do you say that? Same-minded people? Yeah.
That was Eva Smela from Amsterdam, who has completed a 4,000 kilometer walk from Amsterdam to Sarajevo and is now on her way back home on her bike. But she'll be back. Thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. And if you subscribe, you'll never miss a further episode. Until the next Balkan Adventures podcast, this is David in Northwest Bosnia-Herzegovina saying stay safe.
To find out more about us and where we live, why not check out our blog at anenglishmaninthebalkans.com. See you next time.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pachinovich Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.